It is Wednesday, my dudes, and that means it's time for another episode of Codex Radio. As always, I'm your host, Endless Odyssey. It is January 16th, 2019, and that means this is episode 54 and part 42 of our ongoing reading of Planescape Torment. As you can tell, I'm still a little under the weather. I feel a lot better, but my voice is still a bit snotty and gross, so apologies for another episode of dubious quality, but the show must go on. But before we get into today's episode, let us recall what happened last week. The party found themselves in Cursed after taking the portal from Ravel's Maze. Cursed, as you may recall from your planar geography, is a gate town that borders the plain of Carceri on one side and the Outlands on the other. The team seems to have arrived amid something of a crisis in the town. After speaking to a guard, we learned that there's some sort of plague that is affecting the town, and local law enforcement seems completely corrupt on top of that, so Cursed is in a bad way, it seems. We stopped in at the local tavern, where we met Tainted Bars, the barkeep, who claimed that he could tell us how to get to the diva that we're searching for, but in order to do so, we would first need to assemble 5 parts of a key, which seemed to be cryptic verses given to us as rewards for completing some random errands for the other tavern goers. So we completed a few of those, and then turned in for the night, and the Nameless One tried to have a little one-on-one with Anna. He was interested in learning a little more about the torment she was experiencing that Ravel had alluded to while they were speaking with her. She wasn't exactly forthcoming at first, but ended up confessing that she does have feelings for the Nameless One, and the fact that she feels powerless to actually help him, given the severity of his condition, seems to be eating away at her. After that, things got a little physical between them. Either fortunately or unfortunately, I suppose, depending on your perspective. And, of course, the two were interrupted by Mort before things could really go anywhere. And that's where we pick up today, off to get a few more of these pieces of the key for Tainted Bars. I now give you Part 42 of Planescape Torment. He was burly, with a bestial strength to him like that of a rabid bear. His face was scarred and creased with countless tales of violence, and his voice came like gravel scraping over a seabed. "What do you want, Burke?"
"I've come to talk to you about Kais, the dump caretaker."
"Ah, has the poor little man heard who was coming for his money?" He scratched himself. "You go back and tell him he's given it up or he's a dead man. Go on now."
You'd think that building a barricade out of garbage would be easy. Without a care for what you're handling, it should have been a simple matter to toss heaps of junk into a large pile at the gate of the dump. But too many irregular scraps, half-broken boxes and twisted sheets of metal, left hollows that weakened the mass of garbage that we piled to keep the gang from flooding in. Safe or not, though, we were ready.
"Sending others to do your work," Wernit growled. "Dirty play, old man. You'll pay for that."
Anna's punch dagger was up to its hilt in scum when she stepped out from behind a thug, a cold look in her eyes.
"If we're gonna play dirty,"
she said smoothly, ripping the blade free and pushing the corpse over,
"might as well use all the tricks we've got."
The upside about a nice fight is that afterward, once you're strutting down the street clothed in blood, no one else wants to raise steel against you. The dregs of the tavern snuck a few quick peeks, but surreptitious glances aside, they did the smart thing and ignored us. Nabat gave a huge smile as I walked in. "I hear you're done. That means you get the third part of the key." His eyes blazed for just a moment, and the verse told forth. Their portion set. When his eyes returned to normal, he shrugged. Not much of a verse, I'm afraid, but it'll have to do. Thanks for your help. The next portion of the key is with Dallin. He's the one with the young female friend over there. Why did you want me to save the old man? Isn't this supposed to be a town of betrayal? Nabat chuckled. They used to be my gang. Then they ran me out for taking their money, even though I was framed. I planted the rumors about Kais myself. I knew they'd fall for it, and either someone would take them out, or they'd leave evidence that'd bring the guards down on them. Either way, I win. I was getting quite sick of being bounced between bar patrons like an idiot. What really topped it all off was the fact that this Dallin didn't even seem to be paying attention to me. No, his eyes were on the woman in his arms, with short-cropped hair, bodice and skirt the same drab mustard yellow. She was pretty enough, I suppose, but even as I stood quietly, staring them down until they would look at me, the pair simply stared into each other's eyes and giggled stupidly. Dallin finally gave me a glance. He had stern blue eyes and shoulder-length black hair. Whatever he looked at seemed to smolder under his gaze. I'm Dallin. You're looking for a key, he said with a large smile. That's right. What do I have to do for it this time? It's simplicity itself. One of the city leaders is having a bit of political difficulty, shall we say. One of his enemies on the city council is causing him some trouble. Go and talk to him about it and see what you can do to help him out. His name is Anesius. He's a Githyanki, and you'll find him near the gate to Carceri in the center of town. Dakon's gaze hardened. Is he a friend of yours? Are you looking for a particular outcome to this? Dallin's smirk grew wider. Let's just say I trust your discretion. You'll see what I mean. Anesius circled around the Carceri gate. He was sallow-skinned, thin of face and mean of eye, stalking deliberately. I could practically smell his rage.
What do you want?
He snarled, looking up to me. Dakon's gaze was hard as steel, and twice as sharp.
We are to help a Githyanki. What draws him here, away from the song of blood woven by his brothers?
The Githyanki's eyes narrowed.
I have cast aside the hatred I bore for your people. I have risen above the petty feud between our two races. For this, they exiled me, but in my heart I have bested them. Can you say the same?
All right, you two, cut it out. I had some questions.
What are they?
A friend told me you were in need of help. His intensity doubled, and his voice sounded like it could have ground away stone.
What have you heard?
Simply that you were having difficulties with a political enemy. His eyes widened for just a fraction of a second and narrowed again.
I see. And are you going to help me?
I shrugged. It depends on what you need from me.
It is of a delicate nature. A rival requires education. You won't need to kill her if that makes you squeamish.
I mulled it over. Not having to kill to get something done for once was rather refreshing. A good stretch and crack of the moral knuckles.
This is what you must do. The woman, Siaba, she has been selling her influence to the highest bidder, undercutting my position with the burgher of this town. I wish you to humiliate her. All you need do is tell the captain of the guard that she has attempted to hire you to attack me, and you shall be well rewarded. You can find her, if you desire, near the administration building.
Sihaba wore a haughty expression on her aquiline face, and her contempt for me was obvious as she spoke.
I am a busy woman. Do not detain me long.
I spoke with Anesius. He had an interesting proposition. Her eyebrows furrowed. Clearly she didn't expect someone as rough-looking as me to be playing it subtle.
He's plotting some sort of defamation of me again, isn't he? What will it take to reverse his latest trick? How about if I double whatever he's paying you?
Double, eh? He sent his regards. That's all. She sneered.
Yes, I'm certain that's all it was. Remember, whatever he offered, I will double. Think on that, stranger.
Well, what of your progress?
Anesius whispered. Your rival has offered to pay me a large sum to double-cross you.
What? I'll double it myself?
I grinned. You've got a deal.
Then go. Go, or I shall have you flayed.
Well? Anesius offered to pay me a large sum to double-cross you.
Bah, enough of this. I shall match his promise, but I will not raise it any further.
Sihaba smiled challengingly at me.
You'll have to make your own decision. But remember, I may be able to offer you a little something more.
It was with great pleasure and satisfaction that I approached the guard. Getting passed back and forth between two clients like a cheap prostitute wasn't exactly the kind of job that would satisfy my pride. The captain of the guard was a crisp, militarily efficient man, dressed in the standard rust-brown armor. He turned a contemptuous eye to us. Not that I blamed him. With the coat of scars, I definitely looked like a troublemaker.
What do you want?
One of the officials of this town has asked me to murder another one of them. I pointed a thumb toward Innercursed. I thought I had better warn you. His eyes sharpened behind his helm.
Give me the name. Who's planning what?
Anesius asked me to frame Sihaba, who asked me to do the same to Anesius. They're both corrupt. He nodded and spoke in a crisp, clipped manner.
Both of them, eh? Good. This should solidify my control in this city. They'll both be gone before you know it. My thanks, stranger.
Crap. I think I've just been duped. Chapter 95.
I heard all about your fine work, friend. That was an interesting little turnaround. How'd you like cursed politics,
Dallin quaffed his ale.
Here's your payment from my end.
His voice deepened, then taking on an almost ritualistic tone.
As far removed from the gods and light of heaven.
His voice normalized.
For the final portion of the key, talk to Dona Quisho over there.
Why did you want that matter taken care of anyway? What was your connection?
Because Anesius forbade me to play in this city.
He spat on the floor.
And because Sihaba refused to aid me despite our long friendship. She said the time wasn't right to play her hand, because I knew he was a power-hungry mongrel and she a self-aggrandizing whore. I knew that one way or another, one or both of them would fall.
For once, the crawling feeling along my spine wasn't that of another memory resurfacing. Dona Quisho was a red-haired woman, short and plump. Her face was lined with cares, worries, and hatreds that seemed to have festered for far too long. She rasped out,
"You're the one wanting to get underground, eh? You'll need to do Dona Quisho a favor before she gives you her piece of the key. There's a fiend locked up here in town. I need him freed."
She pressed a scroll into my hands before I had a chance to react.
Why?
My eyebrows furrowed and I looked down at the parchment in my hands. The ink seemed to breathe its words beneath my hands, and the clean violet ribbon seemed to be the only thing holding in the thrumming feeling of malevolence.
Because it's mine. Because I sacrificed so much for it. Because they took it from me and hid it from me and locked it away. And no one would ever help me when it was all I ever wanted for myself.
Her voice grew sly, cunning.
But now, I have the knowledge you need,
and you'll never get it unless you let Agrilishanach go.
I don't hold with freeing fiends, she cackled in my face.
That don't matter. You need the fifth part of the key. I've got it. Unless you're willing to find another way into your precious underground, you've got to do what I say.
But how do I know it won't go on a rampage? A little smile filled her eyes, one of the most poisonous smiles I had ever seen.
That's not a problem that concerns me. You cut your own deals with a fiend. I just want him freed.
What do I have to do?
Find the grain silo in town. Find the pentagram inscribed into the floor within it. Use that scroll nearby, and when Agrilishanach appears, free it. Make whatever bargains you like with it, but set it free. I don't care what you do then.
I wondered if my boots were clean. Really, you're about to release a soul-devouring horror of the Nether Realms to wreak havoc on the plains at the behest of an addled old hag. You're doing this for some unknown purpose, in a town where ignorance has led you down the worst path imaginable. And the only thing you can think of is whether your boots are clean when you're tromping on what's left of the town's grain supply. The grain crunches beneath our feet. The ladder rattles as we ascend. Kept on focusing on the little things to keep myself sane. Of course, I couldn't be nonchalant here. Right in the center of the loft was an empty pentagram. The air was dry and cold, and there was a scent in the air, of old magic gone stale and evil permeating the area, held in rein only by a circle of bone-gray ash. The air darkened for a moment, and there was a sense of wind rushing through my head and my heart, bringing a cold chill that seemed to freeze my insides. When my vision cleared, a towering fiend stood, over 15 feet in height, with a dog-like head scraping the ceiling. Its massive torso sprouted 4 arms, 2 that ended in pincers and 2 with clawed hands. Sharp fangs shone ivory yellow, and violet eyes glinted with fiendish intellect. It gazed at me steadily. I swallowed, not knowing what to say, until I felt a tugging sensation at my mind, and a voice rang in my head.
Greetings to you as well, human. I am Agrilishanach. Why are you here?
I have some questions.
Questions? This amuses me. You may ask.
Its eyes stared into mine in the most disturbing way. I was confident in my mental fortitude. I'd gotten out of plenty of scrapes out of sheer will alone, but Agrilishanach was more alien a force than I'd ever faced. What are you?
Some call me a fiend. Some, a friend. I am Agrilishanach. I am Tanari. I have achieved my status through hard work, treachery, blood, and fear. I am a creature of nightmare.
He fell silent. Who calls you fiend and who calls you friend, exactly?
The ignorant who cannot see beyond fear and prejudice. It is their short-sightedness that causes them to label me such. And those who desire power often see me as a means to an end. It is they who call me friend.
Those are vague answers.
Ah, but they are answers nonetheless.
He leaned toward me.
The only answers I will give you.
What are you doing here?
Awaiting my freedom. Perhaps you have come to grant it. You have the scroll.
He pointed a clawed finger at the parchment Dona Kisho gave me. How did you come to be trapped here?
I do not know.
There was a long pause before he continued.
I was summoned and I answered the call. A greater force then intercepted me and I came here. I have been trapped since.
Who summoned you?
You know the answer. You hold the scroll in your hand. It was Dona Kisho.
I nodded. Donakisho sent me to free you. How do I do that? He pointed a clawed finger at the edge of the pentagram. Simply break the diagram by erasing a small portion. He looked at me, his eyes boring into my skull. I paused. What's in it for me if I do? My gratitude will know no bounds. I will lay the planes themselves at your feet. Free me. I need something more concrete than words. If you can't deliver, I'll just be leaving. Very well. I could feel his eyes boring into me. I will grant you a magical weapon. A weapon of great power. A weapon to bring your foes to their knees. I will grant you Heart Grinder.
Heart Grinder?
Yes. A weapon dear to me, but one I would sacrifice for my freedom. What say you? Will you free me for Heart Grinder?
I glanced sideways at Grace. If anyone knew the heart of a Tanari, it would be her. She returned the gaze with a firm coolness and the barest hint of a nod. I had no interest in fiendish weapons, nor in any power that carried the stink of the lower planes. I knew I'd be opening a Pandora's box doing this, but by all the powers, I'd gone this far. At the very least, I'd have eternity to hunt down a Grill Shinnok and correct things with the edge of a blade. Until then, robbing him of some power might help limit what havoc he would wreak. Somehow, I had the feeling his release would be inevitable anyway. I knelt, touching the diagram, and a surge of energy washed up my arm. With a quick stroke, I erased a part of it, and just as quickly the energy faded, and a cry of triumph roared within my mind. Free at last! I'll take Heart Grinder now.
Yes. I will abide by our bargain, human. The weapon is yours, and freedom is mine. A fair trade.
He glared at me, and then a rusty axe appeared in his hand. He held it out.
It looks like nothing, but it is powerful.
I was momentarily skeptical, but a touch of that rusted axe told me all I needed to know. It screamed with power and a thirst for blood. Such a weapon shouldn't be in anyone's hands, much less a fiend's.
You have done me a great service, and out of gratitude I will not slay you. Know this, however, if we ever meet again, you shall rue the day. Farewell.
He was already gone when I murmured beneath my breath. I look forward to it.
You're done, ain't ya? Yes, you are, but where's a Grill Shinnok?
Donakisho crooned. I'm sure it'll be around shortly. She cackled.
And we shall make our plans and lay our traps, and they shall rue their mistakes, oh yes. Here's the last part of the key. As from the center thrice to the utmost pole. Go on back and talk to Tainted Bars now. He'll steer you right.
Still cackling, she gathered her belongings and scurried out. Barce was still polishing a mug with a filthy rag. Seeing me come up to the bar, he casually pulled out a shot glass and filled it with a good shot of strong liquor. I downed it in one gulp. The stuff had a hard time affecting me, but I might as well try, after all I'd been put through for this poem. Such place eternal justice had prepared for those rebellious. Here their prison ordained in utter darkness. Their portion set as far removed from gods and light of heaven as from the center thrice to the utmost pole. Barce nodded.
Are you ready to go? There's no coming back. The door'll be locked, barred, and magically protected once you pass through. You want to do this?
Trust me, I'm in the mood to put something in its grave, and I doubt you'll enjoy having me around for that. He gave a curt nod.
Good luck, Cutter. You'll need it.
Interlude. Ilaron of Sentao stares morosely into the distance, as the alleys and avenues wending through his body take on a darker edge. Not a single shadow falls over chalk-white plaster. The blossoms of his garden are as full and sweet with nectar as they could be. Yet once he stops talking, the silence of his streets begins to swallow everything else. The stillness of the temple bells leaves a phantom ringing in your ear, like the echoed tingle of a lost limb. You lick your lips, just to experience the taste of your naked flesh. You drum your fingers silently, for the simple sensation. Anything at all is better than the ghostly quiescence of an abandoned city. When his voice breaks again, it is old and tired. I have seen lands like this cursed before, in dying nations where people bled away, little by little, leaving only the pus of society swelling in their wake. I've caressed the walls of these cities, and they spoke to me in the groans of a diseased man, slowly eaten by the plague from within. Men flourish and fall like leaves. Each generation lies forgotten, buried beneath the snows in winter, trampled into detritus in the spring. What remains is the tree that held them. The death of men is no matter, no offense to you, good citizens. For one such as I, it is the worms and the blight and the white moss that poisons the roots that are the dirge's echoes. Cytovacus's grip on her spear loosens, as if she no longer possesses the strength to hold it up. Gone is the confidence in her voice, and the memories of a dying world mists in her eyes. And what, pray tell, is it that you hear when you speak to the city of Sigil? A flash of intrigue lights Ilaran's eyes for a moment. His lips purse, and a smile begins to quirk at his lips, spreading into a milk-toothed grin. The Nameless One, he continues cheerfully, slid beneath the skin of the city, crawled through the contours of its flesh like a surgeon's probe. Finally he had reached its bones, and pulling himself up by its sinews, he followed the flow of its pulse towards the heart of what was the diseased town of Cursed. Chapter 96. They say there are two great forces in life that make the multiverse go round. Love, with all its devoted, enveloping pleasures, and hate, the all-consuming obsession. A good philosopher could give a good argument that all action in life is built around one of these two forces in some way. Creation and destruction, life and death, yin and yang, Eros and Thanatos. Personally, I think there's a third option that cleaves between the two. Cold, directed purpose. I mean, let's have an earnest conversation here. Even with my feelings for Anna at one side, and Mort's jabbering on the other, the axis becomes less of a principle of contemplation and more like something you grab at in a moment's need so you can impale a critter with the pointy end. Probably the hate part of it. It isn't love that I feel when the resonance of the multiverse is flowing through me, nor is it hate that causes me to turn a Trellin into a bubbling smear spread across 10 square feet of masonry. It's just the annoying fact that I need to get from point A to point B, and these damn things are blocking my view of the destination. Though if we're on the subject of Trellins, might as well say this. I hate these things. Trellins are more claw and fang than they are flesh. Come at you in swarms, and their only two forelimbs end in giant claws. Punching one is like swinging into a sack of razors. How do these things even mate? Their existence is either one of lifetime chastity or a brutally kinky cycle of murder-suicide. My magic blasts had broken the Horde's charge and softened them up, and I simply ran into the fray while Nordam unloaded his seemingly endless supply of bolts into their flesh. Dakon and Anna tried to help, and for a moment I was worried my screaming would have made them more eager to leap into the orgy of blood and rending flesh. Once they were able to parse out my words through the wet gushing sounds, however, they reluctantly stayed behind. Mort was unusually obedient in this regard. I couldn't regenerate as fast as they could hurt me, but like many melee battles I was engaged in, it was one of attrition. I grunted, sitting on a Trellan corpse and waiting for my wounds to heal. We were far from any safe haven, with no immediate place to rest. We needed to ration our resources, and that meant hoarding our magic, from my force blasts to Grace's healing. It made for slower going, since I had to sit down and take a long breather each time we encountered trouble, but ironically, charging into a storm of teeth and claws was the safer alternative. Immortality has a terrible way of changing the mechanics of war. Of course, this didn't mean we were wasting time while I was waiting for my sinews to reconnect. Anna, could you go scout out the area? She gave me a proud nod, as if eager to put her unique skills to good use, and immediately vanished around the corner. Even knowing she was just around the bend, I had to strain to hear the slightest padding of her soft leather boots. I have to admit that I was nervous for the first 10 minutes or so. If she'd been spot and hurt because of my order, I didn't think I would be able to forgive myself. But an hour of nail-biting and foot-tapping later, I felt a tap on my shoulder and glanced up at Anna. My wounds had mostly healed over by then. Find anything interesting?
Monsters aplenty,
she replied, biting one lip.
Nasty collection of demons to the north. Big flabby things like a quivering like jelly and a horde of creatures round as they are tall, with flesh pebbled like stone. One of the big winged ones might have caught me scent. Looked like an Abishai's great-uncle, he did.
Lemurs and Neperibos, chief. Foot soldiers of the Beitezu.
And a Kurungan, if we extrapolate to guess what the winged creature might be. Strange,
Grace murmured,
that here we encounter the forces of law and evil in such number. Particularly odd to see a Kurungan so far from the schemes of Beitor. And Dona Kisho had summoned a Glebrezu, a demon of mindless chaos.
What do you think it means, Grace? She shook her head.
The schemes of the Beitezu require careful reading and study of their strategies. Something difficult given our lack of information and time to pursue the matter. Needless to say, Cursed hides more in its heart than any would let on.
Save, perhaps, the Diva, Dakon intoned. If it is his knowing that we must seek for your sake, we may probe his knowing of this city as well.
Aye, but there be some people down here as well. One southwards and the other far west. I don't know how they've avoided the nasties, or if they be friend or foe.
What do they look like?
One's a hermit, the other, well, let's settle on the fact that he donated to a greater cause, aye?
You've done splendidly, Anna. I pondered for a moment. I knew full well the extent of my power. Dakon's tutelage and emphasis on knowing oneself had served me well. I'd perused plenty of books about the variety of planar creatures in the libraries of the Great Foundry. Neperibos and lemurs were a minor concern. An Abishai wouldn't live much longer than a pack of Trellans, if that. A Kurungan, well, that one would be troublesome. Doable, but troublesome. They were cautious schemers, however, and wouldn't engage in combat against an unknown foe unless they were sure they had planned out a solid strategy beforehand. Might as well get that out of the way first. Dealing with the Beitorian hordes was a minor matter. It was no small amount of energy I expended with that, but sometimes you just have to send a message. After working through the group of fiends, we met the Kurungan. If he was angry at me for slaying his mindless underlings, he certainly didn't show it. The power the Beitezu sought came from the mastery of their anger, after all. It was vaguely humanoid, covered with grotesque scales, with huge wings folded to make him look smaller than he was. A long prehensile tail slid along the floor with a sinuous, rhythmic motion, and keen eyes watched me approach with amusement. Greetings. It barked out a laugh and smiled at me.
Yes, greetings to you, little human.
Who are you?
My name is not important. If there were a reason for you to know me, you would. If you need to attach a name to me, you may call me Tekelak.
The creature smiled. I've been told that you're a Kurungan. a greater Betezu. Tekalok glanced at Grace, the flesh of its maw curling into a partial sneer. Those sinister eyes twinkled then, and sniffing the air, it shifted its gaze to Mort. If he had a colon, Mort may have just emptied it.
"Yes. Does this surprise you?"
Tekalok looked at me expectantly. Something was definitely up here. You don't see lords and barons mucking about in the caves beneath a planar backwater. "I just don't see why you'd be here. Aren't you supposed to be fighting some blood war or something?" It frowned.
"Yes, there is the blood war. But that is far away for now and need not be spoken of."
"Why not?"
"For no other reason than I choose not to. For now," it glared.
"Then what are you doing here?"
"My business here is my own. I don't see it as a concern of yours."
It smiled knowingly at me.
"I suggest you change the subject."
"I don't understand. Why the secrecy? You give me the impression that something else is going on here."
Tekalok looked at me with mock surprise. "Do I? Or do you choose to interpret my words or actions to suit your own needs? Either way, I have answered your question. I will speak no more on this matter."
"Then what can you tell me about the City of Cursed?" It frowned and gave serious thought to my question.
"It is a forsaken place. A place of betrayal and chaos. A city balanced on the edge of disaster. Travel wisely within its borders."
"Balanced on the edge of disaster?"
It sighed and looked away. "This is a border town, little human. On one side are the Outlands. On the other is the plain of Carceri. So long as the status quo in Cursed remains balanced, this will continue to be a border town."
It paused for effect.
"If things get out of hand in the city, it could slide into Carceri and become one with the plain. Impose too much order, and it ceases to be a border town by sliding into the Outlands." It shrugged. "That is the way of such places."
My eyebrows furrowed. I'd heard of such before, and seeing the plains had strained my sanity time and again. But for an entire city to move was hard to believe. "You're saying the city could actually be displaced?" A mock smile curled on Tekalok's maw. "If that were to happen, what could be done about it?"
It shrugged. "Determine which way the city is slid and apply an opposing force. Too much order? Instigate some chaos. Too little order? Impose more law. If you were persistent in your efforts, you could pull the city back to its border status. Or slide it to the opposite side."
It smiled again. Tekalok certainly seemed amused, and I was certain I wasn't going to like the reason for it. "You've been very helpful, which brings up another question. Why?" It gave me a confused look.
"Why what?"
"You Betezu are supposed to be the incarnations of evil, so why are you being so helpful?" It barked out a laugh.
"Do not mistake my help as kindness, nor me as anything other than evil. I am helping you because it serves my needs, nothing more."
"How does helping me serve your needs?"
"How indeed?"
For a moment I stared him down, through eyes black as sin and bone-yellow teeth of a jagged grin. But I didn't have time for this. I had other things to do. There was still the hermit and the other man to investigate. Vorsha was a rat-faced middle-aged man in shoddy clothes. One hand rested on his dagger and the other fiddled with his collar. He hadn't expected to see anyone else down here, and wariness warred with relief until he made introductions. After that, what sparkled in his eyes was opportunity. "What are you doing here?" He stared at me blankly and then shrugged.
"I'm a trader. This is my storage area."
I looked around. A still, some goods covered with a tarp. Certainly wasn't hard to figure out what was going on. What do you store here?
I don't see that's any concern of yours.
I'm just curious. He shrugged.
Well,
he gestured vaguely.
Ale, mead, and other goods.
What are you so nervous about?
Forsha began to fidget.
Nothing. Can we change the subject?
No, I think you're up to something, and I want to know what.
He glared at me, then sighed.
I'm bringing the stuff in through alternate channels. The guards don't know.
The guy was either a great sneak or very good at bribing, because he sure as hell was a terrible liar.
You're a smuggler.
He frowned.
I'm a bootlegger. Sounds better than smuggler, don't you think?
Say, how'd you like to help me out for a piece of the business?
What kind of help?
Well, recently there's been an unusual amount of activity down here. Loads of Trellin swarming in. This stink of sulfur that wasn't here before. I think I even saw a few fiends through one of the deeper tunnels. Mostly they keep to themselves, but there's a Garaleth nearby. It's been trying to kill me, and that makes it hard to get my stuff out. I need someone to take care of it.
I blinked. What's a Garaleth?
He shrugged.
It's just some dumb creature intent on eating everything it sees.
Why don't you deal with it yourself?
I'm not a warrior. It would kill me outright.
He glanced at my scars.
Anyone who can survive what you obviously have should be able to deal with it.
What do I get if I take care of it for you?
He smiled. I can use a partner. Business is good, and I can't distribute everything by myself. We'll split the profits down the middle. What do you say?
Sure, why not?
His smile broadened.
Great. Anything else?
I'm looking for a diva. I've heard he's in Cursed.
Forsha frowned.
A diva? I've heard rumors.
What rumors? He shrugged and looked away.
Some digging was going on down here to expand the prison. Word is they broke into an unknown chamber by accident.
He turned back to me.
Found something or someone there, imprisoned. Some say it was a diva that was found. Others say it was a Betezu, and others say it was a Tanari. Don't care myself. Whatever it is, I intend to stay away from it.
Where is this chamber?
I have no idea. Keep poking around down here, and you're likely to find it. Not that that would be a good thing, mind you.
The Garaleth was a tall, slender creature with long arms and an elongated head. Several fangs protruded from its oversized mouth, and its fingers ended in long claws. It gazed at us steadily as we approached. Nasty as it was, the creature was in no hurry. It leaned forward and sniffed me, then reached out with a clawed hand and pinched my shoulder. It licked its lips.
You're a little tough, but maybe tasty nonetheless.
I have some questions. Its mouth split into a toothy grin.
Conversation before dining is fine. What do you want to know?
You're going to eat me? Its smile grew larger.
Aye, as soon as ye finish with your damn fool questions.
What are you? It lifted one arm and scratched its armpit lazily.
Garaleth. Farastu. Name's Grist.
I blinked. What's a Farastu?
I am a Garaleth. My station is Farastu,
it said, pointing a finger to itself. With that, Grist belched, and a noxious odor filled the air. What are you doing here? It yawned, and a wave of fetid breath washed over us.
Looking for Diva. Good eating. Suck the marrow from his bones.
There's a bootlegger down here who wants you dead. It gazed at me blankly, then nodded.
I know. Tried to eat him the other day. He got away. Tried to catch him, but He has his place trapped.
It shrugged.
I'm patient. One day he'll make a mistake.
He sent me to kill you. Might as well be honest. Not like this was going to last very long anyway. Grist blew his nose into his hand, then flung the result aside. It wiped its hand dry as it answered me.
Oh, just one more reason to kill him, then. And you.
You're not much of a conversationalist. It gave me a broad grin.
Good. Tired of questions. Time to eat.
The moment its jaw dropped to snarl and leap, Anna's punch daggers carved two new smiles along Grist's throat. Venomous blood spurted from its wounds as those filthy hands clutched at the lacerated flesh, bilious black fluid spurting from between its fingers. A stab of a dagger and a swing of thought-honed Carrick was all that was needed then. I gave Anna a thankful nod as I wiped the mess from my hands. Our group was a well-oiled machine by now. Anna was able to read the real purpose behind the chat without the slightest signal. I stuffed the severed head in a fresh sack. Not much of a conversationalist, but good enough for my purposes, I suppose. Chapter 97. Portia glanced up at me.
Hello, again. What can I do for you?
I've killed that Garoleth for you. He looked surprised, but quickly recovered, and his throat bobbed with a heavy swallow.
That's great. Good job.
You said you'd make me your partner. I'm ready to collect.
Yes, I did say that.
Portia nodded, staring at us for a moment before he began to fidget. After all the things I've been through, I had my doubts as to whether Portia would keep his end of the deal. You didn't think I could kill the Garoleth, did you? He stared at me a moment longer, then sighed.
No, I didn't. Seems you've exceeded my expectations. I was hoping the Garoleth would deal with you and save me the trouble. Now I guess I have to take care of you myself.
The moment his hand slipped behind his back, my arms had already shot out, gripping him in a headlock. Stupid Burke. If we could take down the Garoleth, what chance did he think he had against me with the little pig sticker in his hand? Held as he was, he drove it into my kidneys in quick succession. Wounds like that and you'll bleed out in 30 seconds usually, but all he inflicted was a dull trickle as arteries and veins knit shut as quick as a pinch of my fingers. This was the last time someone in this city was going to use me. It's poked the bear one time's too many. I did it nice and gentle, adding the pressure just a bit, working a moment to get the grip right. It was a favor no one else ever gave me, though given how ungrateful this little weasel was, I doubted he'd appreciate it. One quick twist, a wet pop, and it was over. Easy. Painless. Like dipping him into a pond. I let his body slump gently to the ground, head flopping around a neck freshly endowed with a few more degrees of freedom. Then I picked his pockets for good measure. Chump change, really. Sifting through his goods just turned up a bunch of black lotus and other assorted narcotics. Nothing useful. But Anna had said that there were two people down here. He was a dirty man, hunched and crabbed with age and darkness. His lank, greasy hair flew from his shoulders as he saw us, and his eyes went wide with fear. His fingers began twisting through arcane patterns. I recognized the somatic components vaguely. Something painful, a spell of divine origin. I put my hands up. It's okay. I'm not going to hurt you. He stopped mid-gesture.
Ugh, another visitor, eh? You'll all be wanting to scare the old hermit half to death. These tunnels are no place for a casual spring walk, you know. What do you want from me?
I'm looking for a diva. He shook his head.
Heard rumors about it, but this old hermit ain't seen it. Thought it might be underground since this place locks up all good things, but I still can't find it. If I could, I'd
Ask it if it heard about my god.
He rattled off another sigh and looked down the hallway.
Somehow it feels like it'd be off to the west there, but I still haven't found it. It must have a guardian.
He winked at me. What can you tell me about this place?
This place? Full of monsters and criminals. I'm not one of them. And other folk who mean a body harm. Still safer than the city above, though. At least down here you know where you stand. Up there, no sir.
What are you doing down here anyway? He sighed noisily, caught himself, and looked around wildly for a moment.
I came to Kursk because my god was exiled to Carceri. Been moving closer to him all the time, but I'm not going into the prison plane after him. I'm trying to find a way to get him out. Since he's a power of good, he shouldn't even be there, but I guess that's how exile works.
How long have you been here?
Too long, too long. In the service of a god who's all but forgotten. I remember him, though. I'll find him. If I have to duck all the monsters around forever, I'll find him.
He stared off, mumbling. I looked him up and down. The little man hardly looked like the type who was able to defend himself properly. How was it that you survived down here anyway? A grin split his face.
My god may be imprisoned, but he still grants some measure of power. This old one has set up wards, he has. Not too powerful, mind, and hard to maintain, but they serve well enough. If you're as friendly a group as you seem, I'd let you stay here the night to rest up.
We'd been working hard to conserve our strength, but a little rest wouldn't hurt. If the D.Va was heavily guarded, we'd need every drop of strength to make our way through. And that's going to do it for this week's episode of Codex Radio. Before I let you go, I just wanted to remind you we would love to hear your feedback about the show. You can send me a message on Twitter, I'm @endless_odyssey, or you can tweet at the show's account, which is @codex_radio. And we would love to receive your emails sent to codexpodcast@myriadtrues.com. That's all I've got for you this week, folks. I'll see you next week.